Remember the feeling of rushing home from school, tossing your backpack on the floor, and turning on the TV just in time for the afternoon block of cartoons? Way back when life was all about schoolyard rivalries and making it home before the streetlights came on? Well, what if those Saturday morning vibes collided with an action-packed sci-fi adventure? In the new comic, The Ruth Avenue Raiders, the best, and let's be honest, the cockiest elementary school football team on Ruth Ave is about to face a defensive line unlike anything they've ever seen. We're talking interdimensional robots from Sector 7. When these kids are challenged to a match where the stakes are way higher than just bragging rights, they realize their old playbook won't save them. It's a hilarious, action-packed story about friendship, teamwork, and learning to step out of your comfort zone, all before the sun goes down. If you know a young reader looking for a new graphic novel, or if you grew up on the heart of Hey Arnold, the playground politics of Recess, or the what-could-go-wrong energy of Dexter's Lab, this is the book you've been waiting for. It's The Sandlot Meets Transformers, created by Mad Cave Studios Talent Search winner Damian Becton and artist Marina Otegua Ruiz. The Ruth Avenue Raiders is now live on Kickstarter, and you do not want to miss the kickoff. Head over to www.ruthavenueraiders.com right now to secure your copy of The Ruth Avenue Raiders, only available until June 24th. By joining the squad early, you'll stay in the loop and get access to exclusive early bird rewards and updates that won't be available anywhere else. That's www.ruthavenueraiders.com. Help us bring this 90s-inspired adventure to life. Win or go Chrome.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I remain Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come
out
this week. Why not? You know why not? Because why, yes, we are going to do that. We love comics.
Alex trapped himself in a little corner. He didn't know why, and he didn't know why not. Here's the thing. We've been doing this so long, there is no other thing. We can't do this. If we didn't sign on here to talk about it, I'd be saying these opinions into the closet. So
we
that's
have a bunch
why.
Of great books to talk to you about this week. And as usual, I'll put a spoiler warning right up top because we're going to get into spoilers, starting with Spider-Man, Superman number one from Marvel Comics, written by, hang in there for a second, Brad Meltzer, Dan Slott, Joe Kelly, Jeff Johns, Louise Simonson, Stephanie Phillips, Brian Michael Bendis, Jason Aaron, and Jeff Loeb. Art by Pepe Larraz, Marcos Martin, Umberto Ramos, Gary Frank, Todd Knock, Phil Noto, Sarah Pacelli, Russell Dodderman, and Jim Cheung. This is the follow-up from DC's Superman, Spider-Man. Now we're getting all new tales that are mashing up the two universes with the lead story by Brad Meltzer and Pepe Larraz, but a bunch of other fun stories that do keep it very focused on Batman and Superman for the most part, that we also get
Spider-Man,
for
example, Spider-Man Superman.
I don't know. Whoever. Who even cares? This is stuff for kids.
Well, we've lost him completely.
Anyway, yeah, there's a bunch of stories in here. We also do get Jason Aaron and Russell Dodderman doing the Mighty Thor and Wonder Woman, for example. So there is some variation there. What did you think about this one? Like, what did you think about this one individually? But like we've been doing all along, we haven't exactly been ranking all of these mashups. But certainly with Superman, Spider-Man, we talked about how it compared to Deadpool, Batman, and Batman, Deadpool. So where do you think this fits in that mix?
Well, I mean, I think we talked a bit about how the DC books were decidedly better than the Marvel one book we had at that point. And we're sort of taking it more as an opportunity rather than a gag. I mean, yes, Deadpool Batman felt like a little bit more of a goof when the others felt like real stories. And I got to say, this Marvel collection really does bring some story. Yeah. It was a little bit of a Homer book. Like, I feel like the first story, which takes up a lot more pages than I think the other stories have in relation to the rest, but it is such a Spider-Man focused and a Spider-Man winning story, which I thought was interesting, given so much of this has been about sharing the page.
Well, while we're talking about the first one, I think this is a nice collection. I think it's very kind of heartwarming. I really love that first story. It's very touching. Yeah, I liked a lot of these stories here. The Wonder Woman Thor one was great. The Miles Morales Superman one was really great. I thought this was a great collection and led with some heart. So I think, you know, when you get these two together, it is going to be that. And I thought they did a good job with it.
What do you think of this front story, the Brad Meltzer story? When we talked to Dan Slott, I believe, mm-hmm. he was talking about how this story just, like, rocked him.
Sure, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, it as a writer of Spider-Man, I could see why he would say that. I mean, Spider-Man kind of reveals his truth to Superman, you know? So it was a very touching kind of moment, I thought, like.
Which part are you talking about? The watch stuff?
No, not the watch. How he really feels, what really kind of motivates him.
The guilt.
I thought there were some great moments in here, and Pepe Larraz draws some beautiful art. There's great Spider-Man Pepe. Stuff, great Superman stuff, very emotional stuff throughout as well, like we've been saying. The pace was weird, and it was weird because I didn't count the pages, but they spent a good chunk of the story in a slowly collapsing cave.
Right.
That gets darker and darker and darker. And then they're like, and this is where we're going to get spoilers. They're like, oh, no, this cave was Venom or something. And then for like one page, Superman is Venom. Cool. But then they move away from that. And then they're like, but we also switched bodies or joined brains or something, didn't we? And you're like, all right, also, I guess, cool. And then they're reporters and they're at Uncle Ben's grave and... All of these individual parts are really interesting, but it felt like a 4-issue miniseries that rapidly collapsed quicker and quicker over the course of the story until you hit the ending there, which
just like took away
it took away a little bit from the emotional thrust of the moments because you didn't get to sit long enough for any of them.
Well, and honestly, like, the cave portion of the story was so good. Like, if they had just sort of ended it there or gave us, like, a firm conclusion to that, even cutting from the cave story to the grave, cave to the grave, a common writing tip.
Yeah.
Cave to the graveside story would have
made... We're all born in caves and we head to our grave.
Cave to the grave, which is, I think, another cave, technically. The grave cave. If you think about it.
A scary one, yeah.
What is a coffin but a homemade grave?
Yeah. And by the way, I love your TikTok account where you talk about how we're born in a cave and die in a cave, so why not live your life like you're in a cave? Really beautiful stuff.
That's really true. Thank you for following.
Yeah, I also
think it's weird
TikTok.
I said I made my own coffin. Anyway.
Yeah, I love your TikTok about cave graves and you know, your top 10, you know, cave graves.
Yeah.
And I'm saving up for a good one myself.
Yeah, because here's the thing. You're going to end up in a cave, and you know what you're going to want? A great snack. Taco Bell, right, Pete? What I was saying, though, is, like, if the stuff in the middle is a little like, I don't know. Everything is working so well. Why do we do the extra, like, bit? It really plays like sort of a bit or like a little like, oh, let's do this little thing and get to the other sort of weighted part of the story, which is on the back end. But I did like it, even though it's a little wobbly, like you're saying, Alex. And then there's a lot of others. These crossovers are, I feel like you see everyone being like, can I just tell a story where I touch a ton of, like, Jeff Johns in here is like, can I just do it all? I want to do a whole crossover here. And I was like, yes, good. That's
Jeff Johns and Gary Frank one was very interesting to me because I'm forgetting what he actually called it, but back in the day, he kind of teased that he wanted to do a big DC Marvel crossover that I feel like was probably called, it wasn't Infinity Crisis or something like that, but it was, or like Secret Crisis.
Well, he calls this Identity War.
Right. So I don't think this is what he was wanting to do, but I wonder how much was elements of that, because this really does feel like, again, I have this whole outline for a 12-issue.
Yeah.
Story mashing to these universes together. Instead, I got 6 pages. So there are fun 6 pages, but it's something I would have loved to see a little more of. That's all.
Can you guess right now the featured characters in this, in the Jeff Johns one, in the title page of the comic? Because they're all framed as like blank and blank or blank versus blank.
I honestly don't remember.
There's so many. There's like 100 characters in it. It's Mysterio versus Superman featuring the Thing.
Nice. It was like, oh, real tip of the iceberg situation. Pete, any other faves on the far side of this?
I thought it was a fun collection. I thought it was kind of cool ideas and well executed. I just love the fact that, like, you know, in the first story, they really kind of slow things down so that the, you know, like, I understand what Alex is saying. It was kind of all over the place, but to follow this kind of flu line of, like, Clark Kent kind of just touching in and being like, hey, you know, how you doing? You're all right. You know, it's not really about guilt, you know, giving them kind of some hope, I thought was a nice idea.
It is interesting how to compare the way these publishers are looking at these different things, because this is almost the opposite trajectory of how we went with Marvel and DC with the Deadpool and Batman stuff, where the Superman Spider-Man book had some really beautiful storytelling throughout, but a lot of it was kind of goof arounds. Like, I think we could agree that Tom King, Jim Lee's story, like we talked to Tom King about,
yes,
was him being like, I don't know, I just want Jim Lee to draw some crazy stuff. Let's do that. And that's fine. Or alternately, we had the Punisher Power Girl story, which was absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And then we had, oh my God, there was one other one. Oh, the Carnage Jimmy Olsen one that was off the wall as well. This one, on the other hand, this collection feels like everybody's like, no, this is serious. This is dead serious.
Well, like, I agree with you, because the other one was like, we're taking our shot. It's like they're telling a crazy, they're going as hard as they can. And this is actually being like, hey, no, this is, I really need to tell a Superman story from all these Marvel writers. Like, in previous volumes, it's like random character from each side of the universe. This is like random Marvel character and Superman. Hey, what if this character, what if Ghost Spider got to hang out with, well, that's Supergirl, but like Miles Morales, Superman. Spider-Man, Superman. Spider-Man Noir, Superman. Like, everyone's chasing Superman in this volume, which feels very specific. Mm-hmm. I wanted to highlight the other one I really liked, which was the Gwen Stacy, Lana Lang story.
Oh, of course you like that.
Yeah, it was great.
Of course you did.
Really good to see them together and having these, sort of mirrored lives.
Yeah, the shared moment of that.
Yeah, that was the Joe Kelly story, right?
Yeah,
so that one was fun. Yeah. I did like Stephanie Phillips' story being like, Spider-Gwen and Supergirl, two jerks.
Yeah, exactly.
That was interesting. I did really like Dan Slott and Marcos Martin's story. I thought he actually found a nice balance between 1930s Superman and Spider-Noir. There's a really fun battle where Superman, who at that point can just leap, is leaping out of a building. And of course he has Marcos Martin put him in the Amazing Fantasy 15 pose, but with Superman. And that's fun. Like, I thought there was a fair amount of joy in that story that was missing perhaps in some of the other ones.
Dan Slott is so great about injecting his joy into the story he's telling. And events like this, this is exactly what he's built for.
All right, we got a lot more to talk about, though, so why don't we move on talking about Absolute Wonder Woman 19 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. Wonder Woman is under attack by the new Suicide Squad, or at least what's left of them, particularly Zatara, who has been turned into a flaming skeleton by Veronica Kale, I believe, if I have it correctly. Meanwhile, Zatanna has switched sides and is trying to help her out. And we learned a little bit why everybody is so enamored of Diana in this issue, which is an interesting plot twist. Pete, you're a big fan of this. You're wearing a Wonder Woman shirt. Take it away.
Yeah. First off, cool cover. Gets you very excited for the insides. Yeah, this just continues to be amazing. This continues to deliver. It's top-tier comics. This is just glorious. I love this comic. The art is so badass. The story is epic enough for a goddess like Wonder Woman. This just rocks on many levels. I cannot wait for the next issue. The page layouts, the color choices, it's all art-forward, which is great. I hope everybody's reading this comic because I fucking love it. And, it just makes me so happy. I feel like this is just one of those comics you can hold up to and hold up and be like, this is what's great about comics. So I'm having a blast here.
It is, and this was sort of the most superhero comic, non-absolute superhero comic of the run, I felt like. We get the front bit of the story where it is back in on the island and in the mythological world in a great way. The art in these first, like, six pages is so beautiful. And then it's like a big multi-character, like, parents rescuing their kids through portals, very superhero-y story, which I thought was sort of edging out of character a little bit for the book. Not that I didn't like it, but it just felt a little different. And that continued into the last panel, which is Wonder Woman leaping to fight a giant, like, spider robot. I was like, Is this absolute?
But very cool.
Like, very cool.
Hayden Sherman draws the hell out of that stuff.
100%. I'm not knocking it. It was just, it's going in, and it's natural. Like, this comic, all these absolute books are going to stretch their tones a little bit. And this one, it's interesting. I wouldn't have expected this direction for it to go, and I would expect it to go the opposite in sort of a darker way.
A couple of quick things that I wanted to mention. First, this is very much an external thing, but I just read this book called Circe that came out a couple of years ago, a novel that is recontextualizing the Greek myths through the lens of Circe, which really made me think about Absolute Wonder Woman a lot because she is writing Circe from the Greek myths in here. And I wonder, I don't know, I should probably look into this, but I wonder how much Kelly Thompson read that book and channeled a bit of it, because you can see elements of the way that she treats Circe, the DC Comics character of this book, through the way they have that in the novel. Yes, Pete?
I'm sorry, so you're saying you're wondering about that woman?
I am wondering. Yes. Wow. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gotcha. You really fell for the trap of this book.
I sure did.
Absolutely wondering.
Two other things that I wanted to mention. Great revelation about Steve Trevor in this issue that I thought was a really fun surprise. And there is still a lot of heat going on between Zatanna and Diana. So
yes.
Yeah. I'm shipping that. I'm shipping that.
Really? One more issue in this
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Next up, Exquisite Corpses, number 12 from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Michael Walsh. We are really getting down to it here as the final two in the tournament of serial killers to control America come face to face. This issue is everything that I've wanted out of this series. Not only have we eliminated most of the side characters, but it resets the plate for the whole thing. It reminds you of the premise and the rules in this issue, which is really helpful because there's been so much chaos going on over the past 11 issues. I just thought this was great.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like in this series, we've talked about how it's like, oh, it's so big. Oh, and there's little points where it's like, I just don't know. I can't follow all of the narrative threads, and it's hard to connect the cabal, rich person, state leaders with the townspeople. And this issue, 12 issues in, really does that. And I'm like, oh, what if they? And I'm like, they couldn't have done this any sooner. That's the whole point of the book, is that it happens here. So I don't know. Maybe it's just perfect and we're just who we are. And the fact that this was done, this very big cast, tightly plotted thing was done by James Tynan and a rotating group of writers and artists is amazing to be able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think JT4 is an evil mastermind and really kind of pulling on strings here. Like the Zalbatron was saying, things really kind of come into focus and things get real hyped up for all the kind of forward movement. The colors, the art, this is just the action, the twists and turns. This is a really edgier seat type of kind of fun. It's over the top but a lot of great ways.
Well, I just want to give a shout out to Michael Walsh, who is the other mastermind behind this and does a fantastic job on the art throughout. It's tense. The action is great. It's bloody. It's gory. Great stuff. Really looking forward to the final issue of this season of the series when it comes out next month. Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man number 27 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Ed McGuinness. This is the final issue of the Death Spiral crossover. As Spider-Man has become Carnage, Venom is still Mary Jane, and Torment is just good old Torment trying to kill Aunt May and Aunt Anna as he is wanted to do. Pete has a question here. Spider-Man is a hero who is bitten by a spider, and he gained the proportionate strength, speed, and agility of the spider. That answers your question. Justin, what do you think about this
book? Nope, it didn't answer my question. I just wanted to correct you real quick. It's The Amazing Spider Carnage. You can see right on the title there.
Oh, cool cover. Okay, Justin, what do you think?
Really cool cover. And Pete, as we know, is our goop beat reporter. He's tracking all the goops, keeping track of the goops.
Getting the scoops on the goops.
Yeah, because we are goofing the goops, and Pete is scooping the goops right up off the ground, as usual. And this one has a lot of goop to scoop, as we have, as Alex said, Carnage Spidey. Something that I was like, is this the first time this has happened?
Yes. Yeah,
I don't know. I was shocked. It's written in from a, wow, we're just getting intimate, Carnage and Spidey. And it's really great. I can't believe how much this crossover has punched above its weight. It's been so good, so emotional. The moment in here where Mary Jane sort of closes the chapter on Torment, I was like, that's something. This book is putting so much on. Into these characters, giving them so much, just like so much of a meal to eat in the middle of a like wild crossover. The symbiote world in the Marvel universe has been such a well-trod area, and this feels so fresh. I love this crossover.
What's bothering me is the first off, I'm having a blast with this, except for the kind of twist we get here where. MJ kind of makes a choice, and we don't know if it was Venom or MJ or who, but it seemed like
I'm sorry, so you don't like it when women have choices, is that
whoa, take it easy, guy. No, what I'm saying is, what I don't like is it seems like we're trying to create tension so Peter and MJ can't be together. You know what I mean? Like she makes this choice, and then you're like, oh no, Peter's not going to like this. He's not going to be okay with this. And I'm like, God damn it. We were just getting to a place where they were talking, things were good. And then, why can't they just love each other? I mean, come on, you're killing me.
Pete was just telling me how he believes that a woman's place is inside the symbiote. And he makes a lot of points, you know. He's really
Pete, I hate your TikTok account.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Very upsetting.
That seems like a non sequitur, but it's also true.
Yes, this is great. This is a great crossover. Like Justin was saying, it's really pushing all of these characters to the edge, literally and figuratively, and leaving them in very different places than they started. You know, crossovers are always like everything changes forever. And I don't think this one was promising that necessarily, but it really does actually move the characters forward in a big way. And that's what you wanted to do. It doesn't just need to be like, shocks a minute, instead just figuring out, where is Mary Jane now? Where does she need to be going? Where is Peter Parker? Where does he need to be going? Same thing with Eddie Brock and Dylan Brock. Really into this whole line right now.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states.
Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Absolute Flash, number 14 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Haining. This is the second part of the Mirror Master storyline as Wally and Linda end up in the Mirror Dimension and find out what Mirror Master is up to. And as usual with the Absolute Universe, it's not quite what you expect.
Oh.
The format of this comic, they do a good job really putting us in the mirror world along with our main characters for the first six, 7 pages. Which is nice. I mean, sort of what I said about Wonder Woman, this feels very much like, to slightly contradict Alex's statement, like, this does feel like it's just some fun superhero comics.
Yeah, I agree. Alex is a dick. I think the Mirror Master fun we have here is great. The art is just, has a lot of fun with the kind of mirror work there. You know, it was kind of hilarious where it's that moment of like, no, I'm the good one. I know all of these clones look alike, but trust me, the one person who's good out of all these is just kind of like a fun thing to do with Mirror Master. So I'm glad that we're kind of having fun with that, you know? And Jeff Lemire is a hell of a writer and making some fun choices. As someone who's not the biggest Flash fan, it's the kind of writing is what's saving this for me. So, been impressed by this.
In Your Skin, number one from Image Comics, written by Aditya Bidikar, art by Som. It's about a Bollywood fan who gets a chance to meet the woman she idolizes. It goes horribly wrong, and then it gets even more wronger from there, and that is a real word. This is some real horror, body horror stuff, but it seems like it's just getting started in this first issue. Justin, what did you think about this one?
The progression of this, it's one of those sort of slow boils, the stress just dialing up, and we're not on the side of the character who is alleviating the stress. We are riding with the stressor, I felt like. And so that's a nice place to be, or it feels like a unique storytelling device here. And then it builds toward we are on even the wronger side, to quote, I believe, William Shakespeare, we dip into being sort of implicit in the horror part of it as well.
Yeah, I agree with Justin. Shout out to Boyle from Brooklyn 99. I think that this is just creepy on a lot of levels here. The whole kind of like skinwalker thing and kind of like wearing skin is a creepy idea. And the artist does such an amazing
creepy
job.
Creepy but intriguing, would you say, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, if you're into that kind of stuff, yeah. But this really just freaks me out. But yeah, artist did such an amazing job with that, and it can kind of look wonky, but it was just the perfect amount of kind of like creepy. So well done.
If you could wear anybody's skin suit, like whose skin suit would you wear?
Great question.
I don't even know. I wouldn't want to wear anybody's skin.
I mean, I would say you, 100%, Pete. I would wear your skin in, like, a second if you would give it up. So just, you know.
Yeah, here's the thing. Won't tell us his home address. He won't tell us how to get inside his skin. Like, he just doesn't want us around.
Yeah, I can only put these knives on my whetstone so many more times. They're not going to get sharper at this point.
Alex's knives are sharp. His skin knives are sharp. I guess I would wear the skin of the actor that plays Tracker so I could eat shit.
If you don't subscribe at patreon.com/comicbookclub, that doesn't make a lot of sense to you. But also, if you subscribe, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Hey, it doesn't make sense. End of sentence.
Gorgeous book. I had a little trouble following the story, but I think part of that is leaving bits out because we're not getting all of the information. I am curious to check out the second issue here because it feels like it's just getting started at the end, but really doesn't look like anything else on the stands for sure.
Yeah, impressive art.
Hulk Smash Everything, number five from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Vincenzo Caratu. This is the final issue of the series that has found Hulk smash a black hole, some dinosaurs, kill the leader, I think. And he is about to destroy the entire planet, and only the assembled heroes can stop him. I thought this was a beautiful, lovely, incredibly poignant end to the series that I have loved all along. I was really curious how they were going to end it. But once again, Ryan North finds a really elegant solution to a problem that is very, very pleasing. Even if this last issue is a little bit more like an offshoot of his Fantastic Four run than this Hulk Smash Everything, I love his Fantastic Four run, so that's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I was agreeing with everything that you said up until then, but man, this was just such a great use of the thing. I felt like it was had touching moments as well as just kind of epic Hulk smash and just like impressive panels. You know, that picture of the Hulk finally like sitting down and just kind of watching the sunset and then curling up. Adorable. You don't get an adorable Hulk a lot. So this was just fun on a lot of different levels. Just such a great idea, well executed, amazing art. I just had a blast with this. And I just also smart use of Ben Grimm.
Can I ask you guys a question? Between this and Spider-Man, Superman, really good week for The Thing. Is he the best Marvel character?
Wow. Strong question.
Nice. Maybe one of the nicest. Got a great heart.
I think Pete's on it. He's the most earnest. So I think he's the most sort of accessible Marvel character. I don't think he's maybe the best, but he's definitely the one that I think people are like, I understand this person. He is the Pete LePage of the Marvel Universe.
I'd love to wear his rocks if he'd let me.
Oh, man.
Yes, exactly. Harder to make sure those rocks. Knives are extra sharp.
Yeah, I would love to get his rocks off. Go ahead, Justin.
I love the rocks that he's got. I'm still Petey from the block. I think that Ryan North made a list of what Hulk could smash and then wrote a comic that paid off every single one of those things.
Which is a fun thing to do.
Definitely. Yeah. Calling your shot. We talked to Ryan a couple weeks back, and that seems like the way he works. He's a meticulous writer. He was talking about his insane tiny handwriting, I believe, and spreadsheets.
There you go. Spreadsheets. They're the future. Event Horizon Inferno number one, also taking place in the future from IDW, written by Christian Ward, art by Rob Carey. Hot on the heels of the prequel series.
Hot.
We are now getting a legit sequel to Event Horizon in comic book form. This is set 200 years after the original, when a new spaceship, of course, what do? They find the Event Horizon. And
they
gotta
get to that.
Find
event.
A portal to hell. Come on, guys. What are
come
we
on,
here?
Guys.
But at the same time, Christian Ward comes up with some surprising new wrinkles on the mythology, including versus Paimon, the demonic entity from the prequel and the movie. We're getting what seems to be an angel in here, though perhaps is just as demonic. We don't quite know yet.
The cover would push Angel pretty hard.
Sure would. This is very close, and I say this complimentarily, to what if you did Aliens with the S with Event Horizon. It plays off like that, and it's very fun and very gross.
Yeah. I mean, like, the last one was such a straight horror that really, like, dwelled in the torture and both the physical torture and the psychological torture. This one feels like a little more accessible, where you're coming in on, like, look at these people. They are literally tagged in the intro with their financial issues. You meet each character, and I was like, interesting, the portal to hell is going to run through the different debts that they all have.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very interesting theme to like drop on us right at the top of this. Feels fitting, feels very modern. I also like the science where it's like that is established a bit in the movie and the other comic series, but it's like here's how you travel through space. You got to go through hell. It's the only way to travel for a long distance through space. And I was like, oh, really laying it out there.
Yeah, I agree. This is a blast. One hell of a first issue. Lots of fun kind of twists and turns. I enjoyed the little info panels that came up to kind of give a breakdown of the characters. Great art. Yeah, more of this, please.
Superman number 37 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. Superboy Prime is trying to figure out his place in the world and finding a hard time balancing being a superhero with working at a comic book store.
What? But
there's some more weirdness to come. Pete, did you feel like you were seen on the page when Superboy Prime was shouting about they should always be married?
Yeah, that's nice. It's nice to be seen, you know what I mean? I have opinions like that. That's to be passionate about stuff you believe in. I was all for it. It gets a little, when comics get meta, it pulls me out a little bit, but that was kind of a fun bit. Also, you know, that punching through Blue Beetle was a little brutal, but.
Brutal, you know, to the Beetle.
Yeah, I hate it when people are brutal to the Beetle, but. Yeah, Damian Robin is always fun, and great art, cool story. I was having a blast.
You know, Superboy Prime is a difficult character to love.
Right.
And I think Joshua Williamson's really doing the work to make us love him, I think. It's happening. I'm coming over. Dan Moore's art is definitely helping. But it's a redemption story for Superboy Prime, a character that is really hard, and I think really hard to love. The working at a comic book store is such a smart way to use the sort of uncomfortable meta nature of the character to put it to good use, I thought.
Yeah, I like all of this. I don't like thinking about how comic books work in the world of DC Comics. That hurts my brain a little bit when I try to parse what are those comics about? What is inside the pages of those comics? What do they know? What don't they know? Why are they publishing them? So I try not to think about that too much. But otherwise, great book. Very funny. Very fun. Looking forward to what happens next. The Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Versity, number one from Marvel, written by Jill Kelly and Jordan Morris, art by Per Perez, or maybe Perry Perez. That's what Jordan called him when we interviewed him a couple of weeks back about this very book. But this features Norman Osborn taking all of the non-Peter Parker spider heroes and trying to train them up so they can face bigger threats, specifically him, if he ever turns into Green Goblin, in this introductory issue. We're getting to see how he interacts with all of them and how Spider-Woman ends up in the mix. That was a great kickoff to this, particularly as somebody who's like, there are too many spider people. They're too similar. I don't think they should be at the same place. I thought the team did a great job of differentiating everybody, and this is fast and funny and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it is fun. It's a great kind of use of the team and kind of fun mix up here where you have Spider-Woman kind of jumping Osborn and he's like, oh, no, it's all part of it. So, yeah, kind of a cool idea, fun setup. I'm interested to see more with these all these spider characters. So, yeah, I thought this was a solid first issue. Good job of getting you excited for more.
Hard issue to write, I feel like. A lot of members of the Spider family to juggle. I think Jordan does a great job. Jordan and Joe, they do a great job of really, like, honing on each one of them in time, giving each of them their moment to do a sort of bad job of fighting Norman Osborn. I like the premise. When talking to Jordan, one of the things I'm looking forward to is how much this is going to be college as well as a Norman Osborn like yelling session. We're going to get to see the characters like being interesting and themselves outside of these lessons they're getting from the Green Goblin. And I think this the way the characters were portrayed here was a great setup for that. So I thought this was great.
And one other thing that I'll mention that I was very surprised about, if you are reading this week's comics, read Amazing Spider-Man first, then Spider-Versity, because they actually do tie in together.
Well, I was going to say that too. Like the way how tightly this ties in, I was like, what the? did they just write this next, hand this to me? It feels so like of the moment. Uh-huh. It was great. Yeah. Got me.
Very surprising.
Got him.
Headlopper, number one from Image Comics by Andrew McLean. The book is back about a guy who lops heads. his severed witch's head that he carries around, and various other hangers-on. There's an oversized issue. I'm going to get the page count wrong, but I feel like it's like 85 pages.
Yeah. 80, I believe it's 85.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Huge issue. It's going quarterly now that it's back, if I remember correctly. Pete, you've been on the Headlock beat since the beginning. How did you feel about having it back?
Oh, it's so great to be back. It's great to be lopping heads. And, yeah, also I enjoyed the Agatha story at the end there. Yeah, amazing action, a ton of fun. It's funny, though, because, you know, the JT Sizz was talking about how he loved the bigger issue. I like a smaller Headlock.
Look,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just feel like it's a fun bit to kind of hit quick and then get out, you know? So
more focus on the lopping.
Yeah, I'm more of a lopper, you know, than the actual story. So, you know, when it gets too talky, I kind of lose interest. But, yeah, I think that...
Less yapping, more lopping?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Head yapper.
So, yeah, but, man, just very happy that this is getting
its due. That's called a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's us. We're the head yappers.
Yeah.
I thought this was great. I actually thought there was just the right amount of head lopping, and I know that sounds like a joke, but legitimately one of my criticisms was not enough head lopping
when we remember
the previous series.
Yeah, I was upset.
This is great. Lots of head lopping, lots of fun. The designs are gorgeous and throughout. You don't really need to have read it previously to jump right in here. Great book.
But also this is my favorite read of the week.
Wow, things have really changed. You love Headlopper now, Justin, and Pete hates it. That's crazy.
No, I don't hate it.
I've taken the head. I'm the official axe man of Headlopper.
I think it was kind of cool that we got the Agatha's story back when she had a body. You know, I thought that was a nice little story.
Yeah, nice. You like the backup because you hate the actual lopping.
Oh, come on.
The I've been watching Adventure Time with my kids.
Of course,
and loving it. And it strikes me, watching that so close to reading this, this is like a grown-up's Adventure Time. Mm-hmm. Adventure Time is about adolescence and sort of coming of age. This is about dealing with all the issues laid over with just like a great mythology. This series cares about the mythology. I love the framing of the sort of villain telling, being the narrator and sort of commenting as the story goes on. I think the art is excellent. Just in love, a mix of just great fighting and whatnot, but also some fun cartooning work. It's fantastic. I love this.
Yeah, the art really is great. It's such a great kind of tone and vibe.
Too late, Pete. We already know you hate it. The Rocketeer, The Island, number 2 from IDW, written by John Layman, art by Jacob Edgar. The first issue of this was a big surprise, featuring not just the Rocketeer, but also Tintin, Popeye, another character that I'm definitely forgetting, as they head to an island that by the
Betty
end
Page?
Of this issue... Betty Page?
Isn't that who that is?
No, that's his girlfriend, right?
I'm pretty sure it's Betty Page.
They call her Betty in the comic.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, they end up on an island that we already knew this based on the issue 3 solicits is Kong's Skull Island. So there's more to come there. What did you guys think about the second issue?
You know, in talking about this in our interview and the first issue, reading the first issue, like, it felt like, oh, we're having all these characters. It's going to get a little complicated. But what I really liked about this issue that is done is this whole issue becomes a Tintin story. Like, it's paced like a Tintin. It is the art is laid out a bit like a Tintin story, and it has that. And then you cut to the Rocketeer just blasting off. You're like, ooh, nice. Like, the way the genre is not the right word, but just the each of these characters that are guesting in the book sort of get to take the reins. And I suspect the next one will really feel like a Kong story.
Yeah, I agree with the JT Sizz. This is a tight package here. The combination of art and storytelling is hand in hand. It's fantastic. The art has such a cool look to it. I kind of just so smooth and kind of has that kind of old timey feel a little bit, which is great. I think it just matches everything really nice. I had a blast with this issue.
And it is Betty Page. You guys are right. I'm sorry.
Well, but let me say, I think it's weird also that, like, he had in the comic, he had a girlfriend, Jenny, mm-hmm. I believe, if it's from the movie as well. And now he's just dating Betty Page. And there's no real, like, that's not, the Jenny stuff's over. And he's like, I date this character, this pinup character.
I date Betty Boop is basically what it is.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Your breakup with Boop was trying. I don't know if you guys remember. Alex was really upset on the podcast. And with Boop the musical crushing on Broadway.
Oh, man, it's got to be painful for you.
Because you appear in it. As the
I
the
do,
ex, right?
I'm played by James.
Good. Name a Broadway actor. Name a big Broadway actor.
Literally one Broadway. Daniel Radcliffe.
It doesn't count. Doesn't count.
I would take.
He's a Broadway actor, I think.
Currently, if you named and if you was like describe Daniel Radcliffe's
job. I'll tell you what. The only first and only name I could think of was Brendan Gleeson, and I was like, that's why Brendan. Why is that stuck in my head? That's not Darren Criss. That's who I meant.
There you go. I knew you. I knew where you're aiming.
Jesus Christ! It's also not who I'm thinking of either. Now I can't think of anything. Captain America.
You're thinking of the guy who originated the role of King in
Jonathan
Hamilton.
Groff. That's who I'm thinking of.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ!
I knew.
This is terrible. What a horrible day. Captain America number 9 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Tan Lima. Captain America has discovered that Salvation, the new leader of Latveria, is not actually at Salvation, but actually killing dissidents, and has teamed up with a relative of Victor Von Doom to take back the country. Meanwhile, S.H.I.E.L.D. is trying to find weapons that have been hidden away by Salvation, leading to a fracture in the newly reformed S.H.I.E.L.D. by the end of the issue. What'd you guys think about this? I feel like we've been a little mixed about this Captain America run. Do you think things get back on track this issue?
Well, I was thinking about this a lot while I was reading this and afterward. Like, it feels like this run is a little bit tarnished by the recent Marvel crossovers, including One World Under Doom and Imperium. What was it called?
Imperial.
They were so dense and political with a lot of bureaucracy. And this story has some of those elements. It's about factions trying to take over a country, and it is a lot of talk about like who's with who and why. And I feel like if this was separated from those crossovers, I think this would stand a lot more on its own, because it's a great Captain America story. It's a great idea.
I agree.
It's where the Latveria nature of it is an interesting place for Captain America to be, and him changing sides. It's all good. It's just we've seen this story in a way that is damaging this one, I think.
And it's funny to hear you say that, because this is literally walking us right up to Avengers Armageddon, which is the next event, which I actually thought was one of the strengths of this issue is Armageddon itself has felt very unclear to me as an event.
Yeah.
Like usually when Marvel or DC comes out at an event, they're like, here's the pitch line. Here's the elevator pitch for the thing. And they're like, great. I don't know how that's going to play out. I can speculate, but I don't know what it is. Armageddon, they're like, we're not going to tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And they've, because of solicits, some of that information has come out here. But this, to me, felt like the clearest, like, okay, we're starting to get into what is going to happen here in the setup.
Yeah, no, and like that's why I'm saying, like, this is not a bad story, and I like that we're pointing that. I like this as a starting point for such a big event, because it's laying out some larger ideas and some political notions to get into Armageddon. But it's just it's been front loaded by density in a way that I'm just my brain's a little sore from.
I agree. This is a good kind of jumping on point. I feel like you get kind of the fun villain reveal at the end there that really kind of sets things up. It does feel like a good Captain America story, and I agree. It's got some great kind of twists and turns, and but yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to happen on the other side of this. But yeah, I thought this was a solid issue.
This is another one, though, I would say focusing on too many characters and too many things at the same time. Like the new S.H.I.E.L.D. characters, I want to get to know them, and I think we do get to spend a nice amount of time with them in this issue. But there's a moment where Captain America is talking to one of them, and he's like, you guy who I always trust and know to do the right thing. And I'm like, I don't know who this is. I feel like I saw him in one scene in the previous issue. I'm not sure what his powers are. I'm not 100% sure what his name is. I know he's on S.H.I.E.L.D. or anything like that. Maybe that's on me, but this feels like we're supposed to roll with these characters like we've known them forever when we've just met them. So in the middle of meeting multiple different people vying for Latveria, so a lot going on here. I would love it to just focus down onto Captain America, what's going on with him, and that could be good. So,
I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you.
The Flash, number 32 from DC Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Gavin Grigiori. We had this team on the show a couple of weeks back. Go and listen to it. Great chat with them. Now we're getting like a reset with Wally West and his family. Unfortunately, there's a mysterious villain who has basically made a bet with everybody saying, hey, get yourself in a dangerous situation and get a selfie with the Flash, and I'll give you, I believe it's $10,000. So the Flash is working overtime to try to stop people from actually dying. And he can't, actually, which is a really sad moment in this otherwise very fun issue. But I love what this team is doing here. I think they're doing a great job, even two issues in. Gavin's art is perfect for this book. Ryan North is writing the hell out of it. Great Flash series so far.
Cool cover.
I was just going to try to steal your thunder, Pete, but you got it in. You're so quick on the thunder. The covers, we talked to Gavin about on the show about his previous cover for the first issue of their run. And this cover also backing it up. It's just like so smartly done. And I think that plays out in the issue as a whole. A lot of great moments. There's some fun moments, like Alex saying, there's some upsetting moments. We're starting to establish maybe a little bit of a format, him showing up to be with his family at dinner time in the middle of his action, which I think is awesome. Like, I would love to see more. I would love to see that continue as something that keeps happening. And the art is, it's classic, but really energized and fresh. So it really helps emphasize the speed while feeling like just a great comic book comic.
Yeah, I agree. The use of the yellow and kind of his running through the pages is really smart and well done. Adds an extra enjoyment to the reading, which is great. But yeah, this is pretty dark at times, which for me kind of pulls me out of it a little bit. Crazy idea, I think well executed, but a little dark for me. But yeah, just really impressive art and cool story.
Fun team up with Captain Cold in this issue as well.
Yes.
We had a moment where, to spoil one little bit of the issue, where Captain Cold is standing at the top of a building and Flash is like, he wouldn't jump off, would he? And then he jumps off and he has to catch him. And he's like, why would you do that? Why don't you just call me? And he's like, how would I call you? I don't have your number.
It's good.
Very smart stuff. Character stuff.
Let me ask you, what's your move for the 10K?
For the 10K?
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know. I don't think I could throw myself off a building. That's too scary.
Yeah. But I think like, there's one lady who's mixing some chemicals in her toilet. That's like pretty down-to-earth way of being dangerous.
I'd live in New York.
Wow, good.
Wow.
And Pete, you'd probably, like, what sort of animals do you have roving around your frontier? Like, would you put your head inside of a...
Currently, I'm having a fight with a rabbit in my backyard.
Nice. What's that? A Waskowy Wabbit? Yeah. You are really, you are a full FUD. You've gone full FUD. So let me ask you, what kind of crazy schemes are you up to?
You don't want to know.
Because watch out, because it gets much worse when it's duck season as well.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. I'm in trouble.
Also, if the rabbit hands you any flowers, it's probably dynamite. So just put it down.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, but I have a feeling you're about to have a cigar blow up in your mouth.
Yeah.
Pete, real quick question. Are there any big black tunnels that the rabbit runs through that you're I could run through them as well?
That's the problem. You think you can make it, but you can't.
Just to part the curtain for a hot second here. We have a lot of fun with the idea that Pete lives in the country. And he's like, pushes back. He's like, I used to live in New York. And we're like, yeah. But his response to this one was, I'm fighting with a rabbit in my backyard. So I just want to say, you all think we're mean. He's doing it. He's doing the country thing. He fell off the turnip truck, not us.
Wow, really hit a nerve there.
Oh, it's just amazing to me that you accidentally said the most country shit in the world.
Corpse Night, number one from Image Comics, written by Michael Chavez, art by Matthew Roberts. Now, Michael Chavez is the director of a big chunk of the Conjuring franchise, not the original movie, but most of the latter movies. Here, this is an original property about a young girl in medieval times and her dad. Her dad is killed and then resurrected as the Corpse Knight of the title. They're headed on a path of bloody vengeance and also, by the end of the issue, to find Joan of Arc. So,
yeah,
cameo.
Twist.
Yeah, really, like the cameo we've all been waiting for. And Joan of Arc is really hyped up in the front half, and then they're like, fuck it. Let's go find her.
this is got to be scary for you guys because you both have a daughter. So if you guys die and that daughter prays over your grave, are you worried you're going to have to come back as this kind of like zombie version of yourself and fight?
I would love to come back.
Oh, you would? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've told them specifically to do that and gave them the prayer and everything they need to do to resurrect wow. me.
Yeah, I want to go from the grave back to the cave. You know what I'm talking about? Come Classic. Up, get my craves in person.
Oh, man.
And you know what those craves are? Brains. I want to. I'm craving those brains. Brains.
Well, and I think we've covered this comic, so we can move.
I did enjoy this as a first issue. I thought the Joan of Arc stuff makes me feel like this was written by someone who is named Michael Chavez of Arc. Really pushing the Joan of Arc out there. It doesn't seem like it has to be a part of it, but it's cool that it is. The art is great. Good violence. The death is deeply upsetting.
Yeah, I like the sweetness of it and the fun twist. I'll be interested to see how this kind of moves on past this first issue. But yeah, solid first ish.
Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, Echoes of the Empire, number one from Marvel, written by Ethan Sachs, art by Jethro Morales and Roy Mercado. Now, as we all know, Galaxy's Edge, the theme park area in Disney World and Disneyland, is based during the events of the sequel trilogy. That's why Rey shows up and Kylo Ren and all of everybody else's favorite characters from the sequel trilogy. Now, Galaxy's Edge is actually going to be opening up to other eras, so other characters are going to show up there, like Darth Vader, and recently I just saw a picture earlier today of Han Solo and Chewie are going to be showing up, Luke Skywalker as well, and that's going to be very confusing for people, because how can that happen when the theme park takes place during the events of the sequel trilogy when these characters are old or dead? So, of course, you need a 5-issue comic book series to explain why that's happening, and that's what this issue kicks off.
I can't wait to apply for the job of standing outside of Galaxy's Edge holding this 5-issue series to be like, hey, queer!
Wait,
You're not going to understand.
Read this. I want to over-explain this theme park.
I'll wait. Yeah. And actually can't get in until you read it.
I know I'm making fun of this, but it's mainly crazy that Disney was like, no, we can't have Han Solo, Leia, Darth Vader, and Luke, the characters everybody wants to take a picture with and see wandering around the Star Wars land, because we've said it during a very weird other time.
I believe
let's go back to a time when Disney made a perhaps series of cave to the grave errors. Yes. Where they like, this is going to work forever. Rey is going to be, people don't respond to these movies despite seeing them and paying for them. Similar with the MCU.
That's all right. I'm sure they'll come to our hotel that's all inside with no windows.
Here's the thing. They sold the shit out of that, the hell out of the hotel. I want to go there too. But I've heard a friend of mine tells Eric Fuhrer from Characters Welcome, some of you know. He tells a great story about going to that and being like seeing the lights outside. It's very cool. Everyone's doing the thing. And he's like, ooh, I'll order something from the bar. And he's like, sorry, we only have Sam Adams. undercuts the mystery at the end of it.
Right. And now honestly, it's a big empty block on the side of the park because they closed it down. So good job.
Heartbreaker. It must have been a little more expensive than the thought to run. But this comic is being a bit of an echo of the conversation we're having, where it goes from the art is very cool, and I like some of the ideas, but it's really like, oh, you like Rey? well, look at this little moment. And it's like, oh, you like all these other folks? You're going to see them for a second. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what this the cohesion is going to be difficult.
Yeah, I think this was fun. I like the Nerf Herder reference. Luke was a little too cocky for my taste. His now is my turn line. I was like, I like Luke a little bit more, kind of like talk less, do more badass stuff. But I thought the art was great. And, you know, I mean, it was just kind of like, hey, remember Star Wars? Like, hey, here's these characters you guys know. So I didn't hate it. You know, it didn't bother me, but I wasn't kind of floored by it.
Man, this must be so tough, though. Something like this, yes, to write. Like, definitely. I cannot imagine the challenge that Ethan Sachs has before him, where I'm sure beyond having to explain everything that I was joking about earlier, also being like, oh, yeah, but canonically you got to figure out where these classic characters from the shops in Galaxy's Edge fit in and what their ancestors are like. But you can't do that because that wouldn't work with the continuity of our theme park land. Like, all of this stuff is such a, like, raised difficulty level that I agree. This and I'm like, oh, okay, there's a fun moment with Darth Vader. There's a fun moment with Luke. Cool. You got that stuff through, and that's good.
Yes, and I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Kaido 84, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Rosenberg, art by Jared Cullum. This is a 1980s set, ancestor of Usagi Yojimbo, who is going on a bit of a caper. Pete, you're our rabbit guy. Is this the rabbit you're fighting with?
No, gosh. Oh, man.
I hope now not, you're Pete. This rabbit's going to kill you,
breaking my heart.
Dude.
Oh, my God. all right. Yeah, I just love this. This is such a cool, I mean, the art is really fantastic. The art style, the interesting kind of story, the great back matter. This is a fun package. Great times. I'm having a nostalgia bath with this. You can't tell me nothing. This is a blast.
In the same way that Splinter, before he was mutated because of the ooze, learned a lot of karate, I'm going to go teach the rabbit in Pete's backyard some great samurai technique.
I'm having a hard enough time. Don't do that.
Oh, yeah? You're having a hard enough time with a non-samurai rabbit.
Yeah, don't samurai him up. I'm in real trouble.
That rabbit's going to, you're going to be trying to get, because he's stealing your, what, carrots? I don't know what's the problem here. But you're going to go out there with your nunchucks, which is, I assume, you have in your hand when you're outside up in the country, and you whip him at him, and he's going to grab him out of your hand and fucking kick your ass. it's crazy to see. I feel like, you know, we have talked to the creatives behind this, so we know a little bit of the backstory. But it feels to me like this is like, what if Usagi Yojimbo was more of a badass, just a nonstop badass? Mm-hmm. And that's literally what you get in this comic. And,
well, that's the fun of crossing over the 80s with this character, is it's just kind of making him more badass, you know?
We were all very cool in the 80s.
Yes, no doubt. Let's just flash a couple of pictures of each of us in the 80s.
And here we go. Oh, just
so
kidding.
I'm just checking with the editor. They can't find a single one from each any of us. Nothing.
No, that's crazy. They were all burned, I'm hearing. That's very strange. Yes. Gorgeous art in this book. Jared Cullum is drawing the hell out of this. It looks beautiful. I also love the little backup pages they're doing where it's them creating the story. Very cute backup there. Let's move on and talk about Green Lantern number 34 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Ig Aguara. We're split into two stories here. One, Hal Jordan is trying to track down, Kyle Rayner is trying to track down some escaped convicts on Earth. Meanwhile, Hal Jordan is lost in space with one of the Wonder Twins and trying to find out something is going on when he meets some very mean guardians who have turned evil again, I guess.
Stern,
yeah.
This is fun. This is just happens to fun. The cover is excellent. We get a Beverly Hills 2814, 90210 style parody, which I thought was awesome. And I like the split nature of this. I like seeing Kyle Rayner not just be sort of a square Green Lantern, being able to do some stuff. This is Jeremy Adams is having fun with his Green Lantern series.
Well, and this is also is the name of the character Odyssey, the one that he's hanging out with, that she used to be a space criminal, and now they're trying to make her way in Hollywood, which I think is a very fun place to stick Kyle and characters. Really enjoyable, really metatextual, because Jeremy, of course, has a background in TV and Hollywood stuff as well. And the Hal stuff is really interesting as well. I don't know why we're doing, like, oh, the Guardians are evil again, but it's interesting, so we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, the Green Lantern team up with the Wonder Twin was awesome. Cool kind of fight stuff, great art. The kind of Orko Guardians are not my bag, but yeah.
Well, let's see if this is your bag, Pete. Cyclops, number 3 from Marvel, written by Alex Pagnol, art by Roger Antonio. Cyclops has lost his visor, is teaming up with a young mutant who begrudgingly is trying to help him get it back. And meanwhile, a new version of the Reavers are on their tail, leading to a big confrontation about the end of the issue. This book is badass. This is great. We talked to Alex at the beginning of the year about this book, and he really talked about his passion that he's putting into this and trying to make this a defining story for Cyclops. So far, he is. There's at least two moments in here, one where Cyclops lets loose on one of the Reavers that cuts this wide panel that Roger Antonio crushes, and then the final page is so cool.
I love this. I love the redemptive goal that Alex had with this comic, and to achieve it in a way that isn't through like a bunch of speeches or a bunch of like talking about continuity and dealing with all that, just like being a badass. Because I feel like by the end of this issue, like that last panel is a badass moment for Cyclops, and one we haven't seen in so long. And it was great, and it made me angry that no one has attempted a redemption story like this for Cyclops, because it's right there. He's been capable of this for so long, and I love that we're finally getting there, but it's crazy we had to have this character be such a bummer for so long.
There's a lot to unpack there, but okay. I'll give you the fact that the Cyclops, like, all red kind of, like, line going through the panels was really badass looking and very cool. Okay, I will give you that, Zelvatron.
What do you give me?
I'm not giving you shit.
You just gave something to Alex?
Yeah,
that's right. You can't bring presents for just one person. It's if you bring gum to class, you have to bring gum for everybody.
Yeah, I want a treat.
Shut up, teacher. Listen, here's the thing. I gave you that, but Justin, what I'm not going to give you is that last panel was badass. He's sitting there. He's like, oh, you must be thinking of the one with the claws. What the fuck? You don't know Wolverine's name? You're just going to refer to him as claws? What the fuck are you talking about?
Wait. You think Cyclops doesn't know Wolverine's name in that moment?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I challenge you to find any comic where he refers to him by name. It doesn't happen. It's like how Frodo never calls Legolas by name in any of the Lord of the Rings movies because he doesn't know Legolas' name.
Professor X is like, to me, my X-Men.
To me, my colleagues that I enjoy being around.
Yeah, here's the thing. By like Uncanny 279, Cyclops still didn't know Wolverine's name, and it was too embarrassing to ask.
We've all been there. You have those people, you're like, ugh, I keep up with this person, I don't know their name. Like, you're going to just talk to them about, like, she's the one with the claws. She's the one who wears hats.
Right. And you hope somebody says it at some point, but he's constantly calling people bub, so you don't know any names when Wolverine's around. Same sort of thing. It's tough.
Here's the thing, like, Cyclops is a dick. Just have him be a dick, and he's the leader, so that should be enough.
I'm sorry, that criticism doesn't make any sense. Yes. You want him to be a dick, and you don't like the fact that he's being a dick to Wolverine at the end?
No, what I'm saying is, everybody's like, oh, Cyclops, he's the leader, so it's okay that he's like a douchebag or whatever, because he's carrying the leadership, around with him, and it's hard on him, and so that's why he's an asshole. And I bought that. I was like, okay, fine, that's who Cyclops is. But now we're like, no, Cyclops is a badass, and now we're going to have to sit through this bullshit where he's like, I'm a soldier, and like, I'm – it's like, I'm not here for it.
I would invite you to look at Cyclops with some fresh eyes, because there's none of that leader stuff that you talk about. None of that's in this comic. This comic is about a hero, a person who is stuck in a bad situation, who has cool mutant powers. You even said that they looked cool on the page, and he's out there just fighting his way through. And yeah, a bunch of people don't know Wolverine. That's normal. Okay, if I was trapped on an island and someone was like, oh, who's that like? I wouldn't be like, oh, Pete LePage. I'd be like, the one who yells the most.
All right.
And fine. I'd like you to look at it with fresh eye.
Okay. Good.
Right.
Hold. Hold. No, we do. Sorry, we have an audience here. We're just waiting. We just got to hold for the laugh.
Yeah. Can you hit the button that puts up the laugh light? Because I think I don't think they're seeing it right now. So
Alex, the applause sign is black. It's like so bright. It's blasting so hard. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, okay. Like maybe dial it back a little bit. So
do you think it's too bright? That's the issue.
Yeah, maybe it's too bright.
Here's the thing. They're all wearing sunglasses, Alex. They're very cool people. Man.
They must have. Oh, my God. Well, maybe they should look at it with fresh eye.
Oh shit. Oh my God, they're laughing so loud we can't hear. It's like super sonic.
Do you think Cyclops only has one eye?
No, he's the one with the claws, I believe. Also, just to be 100% clear, for anybody listening, the joke of the thing is he's like, come on, I thought you were merciful. And he's like, no, that's the one with the claws. He knows what Wolverine's name is. We know that. Pete may or may not know that. I don't want to clarify.
I'm just like, why is he being coy? You know what his name
he's
is.
He's not being coy. It's a writerly way. Joke. Yes, yeah, it's for good. Us, the audience. It's fine.
Yeah.
This show is like a Death Fight Forever, number 3 from Image Comics,
sure
written
is.
By Andrew McLean,
sure
art
is,
by
buddy.
Alexis Zurit.
Who's going to die first?
Sam McKenzie and Erwin Papa. This podcast, baby, from the cave to the grave. Bring it on.
Yeah, beyond the grave.
This series, like we talked about over the previous two issues, is like what if Street Fighter, Masters of the Universe, and every other 80s cartoon had a baby. Here, we're getting a bad guy and a good guy are teaming up, take it to the big bad guy. They find an alligator in this issue, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. This is a blast. It's a fun, over-the-top 80s in such a great way. I just think that it starts off with that kind of like slow burn. It kind of gets you in that mood, that zone. It really delivers. It's just the fun villain transformation as this jacked alligator. I just think this does such a great job. The cover sets up the tone for this, and the 80s fun is just nonstop, and it's not going to stop here. So keep enjoying it.
There's no more of a nostalgia bath than what Pete's describing right now. This is like pure all of that jammed together in comic book form, and it is the art is fantastic.
Yeah, this book is basically like going to the corner store, checking out the comic book spinner rack, buying a bunch of candy, going to the back, playing Street Fighter 2 and eating the candy with one hand while you jab the joystick with the other. It's great. Great stuff. The Sentry, number 2 from Marvel, written by Paul Jenkins, art by Christian Rosado. The Sentry, as usual, is having some severe mental problems, and that's what this book is about.
Chatting about him.
Oh, boy. This poor guy, he is dealing with his dog, who is dying of cancer, but also the fact that, once again, his relationship to the Void has changed in a significant way. This is going in directions that I definitely didn't expect, even from the first issue. But man, it's—I don't know. I'm going to repeat the things I said to the first issue, but like Paul Jenkins gets the Sentry like nobody else. He redefines the Sentry like nobody else, and just really continually dives in and keeps twisting and turning over this guy's psychology in new ways. It's really hard to read, but in a incredibly well done way. At the same time as you're getting some big action and big sequences at the same time.
I was really moved by the Hulk stuff in here, which was really cool. The Stupid Crystal's line was great. Yeah, the dog cancer stuff was just too sad for me to deal with. But yeah, I'm not a century guy, but some really cool ideas here and some great moments.
Yeah, I mean, I think a sentence like the dog cancer stuff was sad is like that. That makes a lot of sense to me.
I thought it was fun, but okay. Yeah.
I mean, Paul Jenkins was, I think, the main creator of the century, right?
Dog back cancer? In 2000.
Yeah, it was Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee.
Yeah. And so, like, like you're saying, that's why he understands his character so much. I like that we're coming in through the dog's illness story to get to a much darker turn that it looks like it's coming next issue. It isn't
darker than dog cancer? God damn.
It isn't. Yes, another great pull quote from the show. It isn't John Wick based, but it's like the emotional version of that. And I'm excited for a comic, for an issue that has a lot of talking at the top between the Sentry and Reed Richards about just pretty regular stuff that's bumming him out. I'm surprised that this is such a win for you, Pete.
Harley and Ivy, Life and Crimes number 5 from DC Comics by Erica Henderson. We're continuing to follow the relationship between the two. They are on the run and hiding out at Ma Hunkel's in Brooklyn, developing their relationship and also figuring out how they feel about kids. And as it turns out, it's very differently. Not to steal your thunder, Pete, but this was my favorite cover of the week.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
I'm sorry you had one comment and I took it. This is great. This is just a beautiful composition by Erica Henderson. We get Ivy and Harley hanging out in a street in Brooklyn. There's a great bit of graffiti of Ma Hunkel with the pot on her head in the background. You get this incredible, like, wrought iron staircase as well. But I think what really does it is just the different attitude between Ivy and Harley on the cover here. Ivy is haughty. She's got one leg up. Harley has those big eyes the way only Erica Henderson could draw them. And she's drinking like a Slurpee or iced coffee or something like that. She's got a big sack of stuff that they've gotten probably from the bodega. There's some pigeons. Everything about it. I love it. I love this.
Yeah, it's a very New York moment, which is something that we'll walk you through, Pete, after we get off, after you finish with your wabbit.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it does have such a great New York vibe to it, and but also really says a lot about the characters in such a still moment. So really great cover that captures a lot. But yeah, the art is really the hero here for me. It's just such a cool take on these two characters, the way they look and act in this comic. Some really fun, small moments. Love the bits and the art style. But overall, I just love the vibes of this comic. It's just such a cool thing to open up and get into. Just something about the way the art takes care of you in this comic. It feels so great.
Really fun turn on the last page. It's amazing that Poison Ivy is having such a renaissance right now in the DC universe. Ironically, on the heels of Harley being such a big, exposed, overexposed, some might say, character, to have Ivy be just the crushing it so much in comics and again in this one is great to see.
The Infernal Hulk, number 6 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Adam Gorham. The Infernal Hulk has raised a demonic city on Earth, and it hasn't made the heroes very happy, so they're gunning directly for him this issue, to the point that Iron Man wants to kill him and is like, I'm going to kill you, Hulk, which really threw me for a loop.
Maybe they're friends.
They're friends, and usually they're like, we got to figure out a way to stop the Hulk, not we need to murder him. But maybe it's pointing to the dire circumstances they're in, and things only get worse by the end of the issue. What'd you guys think about this?
I think the quote that maybe sticks out to you that felt maybe a little not Tony Stark is, I found a weapon and used it to make a better one, and now I'm going to kill your ass with it.
Yeah.
Zed Strike is not a Tony Stark.
Yeah, maybe that was the one.
I mean, here's the thing though, this is elevated. We've gotten so much elevated horror in this series, and now we're like, this is like a comic book version of Renaissance paintings. Like Iron Man's in like a almost steampunkian like angel armor situation. And the Hulk is like a Frankenstein tearing apart at the edges muscle monster. And so these two are fighting in a way that is as big as him being like, I must kill the beast. Like, he's like Gaston here. So I do think it works in its elevated way. And I do like that we're sort of going back and forth between these big monstrous issues and the smaller town stuff happening with Bruce and Betty. Excuse me. That's a good balance.
Yeah, I mean, I love this comic. It was so badass. The way it starts in this kind of like first page where you kind of get this epic monster world and kind of feel to it, which is really incredible. And this kind of Iron Man and what I put like medieval Hulkbuster suit, and then later they called the Hellbuster suit. This is just really badass. The Hulk is very unkillable in this, and it's really frustrating Tony Stark and the room full of assholes who are trying to murder this Hulk. So, I just think this is so kind of like Hulk turned up to 11 here in such a crazy way that I can't wait for the next issue. I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. This has so many kind of jaw-dropping moments in this issue where you're just like, what is happening? Holy shit. I'm really excited to see how he's going to land this and how this is all going to kind of unravel here at the end. But, man, what a blast this is.
All right, from Infernal to Hell, The Crown, A Tale of Hell, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Todd Mignola, no relation, art by Warwick Johnson Caldwell. This is the second part of a two-part storyline focusing on Hellboy cousins, is probably maybe not the best way of putting it, but a way of putting it, and showing their machinations to take control of the throne. Leading into, I believe this takes place pre-Hellboy, leading potentially into directly how we got Hellboy in the first place, which I don't know if we ever have seen. I am honestly not sure.
Yeah.
I don't think so, and that may be the point. Like, I feel like Mike Mignola is, he sort of completed his Hellboy story for the time. And now he's orbiting it so hard. We've talked about this a little bit. Like, all of these small series he's doing are sort of taking a little piece and being like, oh, remember Hellboy? Here's a little chunk of that. We're approaching this part of the mythology. And now it feels like it's circling back to something very basic and core to Hellboy. But that makes me think, is this leading to new Hellboy from Mike Mignola?
Yes.
How many times have I said that in the last 5 years?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I believe my counter is up to 5 years at this point of us saying he's bringing back Hellboy, and we're not there yet.
But well, he's not.
This issue made me very excited for it because I was like, this is Hellboy's origin story. He's coming back. Mike's bringing him back. This is all setting it up. I was losing my mind because I was like, holy shit, it's Hellboy.
Just to talk about this issue, though, I thought this miniseries was great. This is one of my favorite Hellboy-adjacent things that's come out in the past couple of years. I thought it was much funnier than the other ones. And just watching, I don't know, I could have seen this as an ongoing with all these demons in hell jockeying for power and pushing up against each other. I had a good time, and the art was very good as well.
Art is amazing, yes.
Rogue! You had more.
I was just going to say, I also enjoyed it. I liked the sort of palace intrigue of it that we got a lot here. And the fact that it is leading to something I didn't expect, I didn't see coming, so that was a nice added bonus in the back half.
Rogue 4, number 4 from Marvel, written by Eric Schultz.
Rogue 4!
It's been a long night. Art by Jim Toe. Rogue has been dealing with some weird memories that she's been having. It changes to her powers. She finally gets it under control of this issue, but we also find a pretty sad reason for everything that's been going on with her. Man, this issue really packs an emotional punch by the end, I thought.
Well, and I think it does that especially because it's such a fun, very old school style Rogue story for the first two-thirds of it, where she's just like figuring out she's sort of like lighthearted and much more fancy free than we've seen in a long time in continuity, because she's been like leading her team of mutants down south and all of that. and just in general in this series, she's been very stressed the whole time. To have that and then the flip, like you're saying, Alex, was like a very successful pendulum swing.
Yeah, I think that you're right. It does like start out very typical, fun rogue. She's punching a bunch of bad guys. You know, it's nice. But then the turn and the nemesis kind of reveal is like, oh, shit. So we got some questions and some concerns here. So it kind of, yeah, I was having too much fun where I was like, oh, no, I don't want to go down this dark path here and find out about this horrible tale. I was having so much fun with this rogue. But it's in great hands. The art's great. Erica does such a great job of writing this. So I'm going to shut my mouth and enjoy the rest of the story that she's going to tell.
Great.
Finally, shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth. Peril of the Brutal Dark, an Ezra Cain mystery, number 3 from DC Comics, DC Vertigo, written by Chris Condon, art by Jacob Phillips. We're continuing to follow Ezra Cain's investigation of this maniacal operation. He runs into, it's fair to say, an ex-girlfriend who's also investigating at the same time, and we get some romantic sparks this issue as well.
Ooh, mama.
Oh, hachi-machi. What do you guys think? How are you feeling about this 3 issues in?
You guys just made it creepy with the noises there. Yeah, I mean, this continues to be great.
Ooh, mama, I love Pete's take.
please stop. Yeah, this just...
Chop me up some more of those opinions, Pete.
Oh, my God.
Say it a little more slow.
The high drama.
Can you get closer to the mic, Pete?
The twists and turns. You know, you can tell that this is in very capable hands, and, you know, I really do love the kind of art and tone that this comic has.
Capable hands who have really thought through what the very long-term story that's being told here. Excellent. This team is unbelievable, one of my favorite teams in comics right now, as I've said so many times. I want to highlight, though, in this, the colors of this. There's a couple great just pages throughout. The first page is beautifully done here. We're laying out, there's a lot of story to be told in this. There's a big sort of interview that happens in the first chunk of it. And then we get some just great, like, setting the stage, like subway car at one point is just so cool. The colors are just so well done in this.
Great.
Another new favorite series.
Last but not least, Mark Spector, Moon Knight, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jen McKay, art by Dev Malia Promenek. This issue, Mark Spector, Moon Knight, is going up against Bushman. Is that the name of the character?
Bushman.
Bushman.
Carl Bushman.
He is my dentist, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's they're being goaded on by Zodiac, leading to another big twist at the end of this issue. Pete, you're the Moon Knight guy. How are you feeling about this?
Well, yeah, I'll try not to be upset that you put this all the way at the end of the stack, but yeah, this is great.
Really?
Oh, I only put it at the end because it was the worst one. Go ahead,
Pete. Oh, you son of a...
As really we always the say, nuts our on the way out the door. Ranked.
Yeah, I loved all the action.
In a lot of cultures, that's a nice way to say goodbye, Pete.
Oh, okay.
A swift kick to the nuts sends you on your way.
Oh, man. It's a real kick to your pants.
It's in Ireland they do that?
It's an Irish. That's called an Irish goodbye. It's a quick kick to the nuts.
I think that's what it is.
I'm pretty sure it's an Irish. It is in my house.
That's how we said goodbye to people at my wedding. We're like, thanks for coming.
It was an Irish wedding. It wasn't an Irish wedding. I was there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I liked the power up here that Moon Knight got. This is badass. Tons of great action. Yeah, and then the fun kind of last panel twist as the dark shadow falls over the city. Yeah, I will tune in next time. I'm having a blast with this. Thank you very much. I enjoy it.
Pete's going to keep his mouth shut and tune in like a good radio fan.
Yeah.
The last page reveal, I was like, Ex Machina? Anybody else? Wait, the comic?
I'm familiar with the comic. Did they do that in Ex Machina?
Isn't there? I mean, the big reveal at the beginning of Ex Machina is that only one of the Twin Towers had fallen.
Oh no! I thought the reveal was that New York had gone dark. A bit of dark.
Yeah, there's a so big shadow.
That's the freedom
over town. the city.
If anything, I thought it was very reminiscent of Thunderbolts, the movie. Though I assume they're going in a different direction there.
I thought maybe there was something like maybe the moon was gone and there was like this black kind of shadow in the place, or there was a giant like monster blocking out.
Yeah, I assume something went wrong with the midnight mission, so it's like spewing midnight over the city. I don't know, whatever.
Well, there's some goop.
Yeah, there's some goop. God, I hope it's a Venom thing. That would be so cool.
I love that. That character needs some exposure.
Love this book so far, actually. I
really
have said this with the previous two issues, but I always feel like Jed MacKay starts his runs strong on Moon Knight, and then they sort of like fizzle off into other things. But these have been three killer issues in a row, in my opinion. Yeah. And part of that was we started with the very... oh my gosh, what is it? Declan Shalvey, Warren Ellis run of Moon Knight, where he's in the insane asylum. The first issue felt a lot like that. I was surprised they didn't continue that long term. But instead, it feels like the structure of this new book is we're getting like big concept in an issue, wrap that up, tee up our next big concept at the end. And I love that. Like, this is really working for me.
Cool.
Yeah, it is good. And like you're saying, I think it's escalating well, which is hard to do. And especially with a character like Moon Knight that seems to get more complicated rather than less so.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yes, and we'll see you in Pete's shotgun backyard if you want to see a real show.
I'm wondering about women.